Looking ahead, challenges and opportunities in the changing world. Welcome to Talking Economics, podcast launched on the occasion of the 30th anniversary of the Center for Economic Research and Graduate Education, Economics Institute. With my today's guest, Jared Lexton, we will have a closer look at challenges and opportunities in economic analytics. Jared moved to Prague about 10 years ago and worked for 6 years in macroeconomic forecasting. He completed his master's in applied economics here at CERGI in 2018 before moving to SpaceNow, a startup where, as he says, he was trying to make satellite data relevant for economic forecasting and decision making. But he's now returning to his origins and beginning a new venture with his father that is focused on bringing useful economic modeling and analysis practices to anyone willing to listen. Welcome, Jared.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to, you know, pose the general question. We are speaking about the impact of the pandemic, the opportunities and challenges on your field. So can you say what is your field and so what are we going to focus on?
Okay. So my field very broadly would be just general macroeconomic analysis. And I've had a little bit of an opportunity to do it in a couple different fields. One in the more traditional sense in the context of maybe central banking and public institutions. And I've also had experience working in the private sector. So I have a little bit of insight into both of those industries and how they are thinking about the topic.
Mm-hmm. And so what is your takeaway? What is your position now? What do you...
Yeah. So my takeaway, if we phrase it in the form of the challenge. So I think the biggest challenge for me within this huge analytics industry is pretty much advocating the importance of critical thinking versus an alternative where you say the model says approach or mindset. And I think if you strip economics to its essentials, you're pretty much... It's all about critical thinking at the end of the day. And but with a little twist. I'm grinning right now. So trust me, I understand how lame that can kind of sound on its face. Actually, I had a friend who went on a Tinder date once, and her date in the profile said interested in critical thinking.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
What does it mean? Who came to the date?
She did, but she told me ex post, and when she told me that, I actually couldn't stop laughing. It actually was very cringy to me when I first heard it.
It's a huge buzzword.
Buzzword. Yeah, it almost means nothing. It's also, I would call it involuntary. Critical thinking in general. Like, if you have a brain, you're most likely thinking and potentially critically.
Potentially, but this is, I would say, also a skill that needs to be developed. We are lazy, right? We're often lazy to actually go through the critical thinking because it requires more than just snap.
I agree. There's a huge element of anxiety when you really sit down and you just say, okay, I'm going to think about something. People typically like to be doing things. And when you just step back and you say, okay, I'm going to spend some time to just think about this. A lot of people can get a bit anxious for this. Back to the twist.
Mm-hmm.
The twist on critical thinking as it pertains to economics which is there's the added element of uncertainty. So critical thinking under uncertainty is a totally different ballgame when you're discussing what it means to be critically thinking. And what I mean by that is people really have a difficult time making decisions in general when there's a lot of uncertainty around. And like my wife is a good example. Mm-hmm. She has, and also Serge, graduate. Okay. Great gal. and she has difficulty making decisions if uncertainty, if there's too much uncertainty. So that's my role in the relationship. She does the plumbing, the electrical fixing, the laptop fixing, the laying the floor down on the ground and installing.
Amazing. Do you have permission to speak about her?
Yeah, she's fantastic. But I would say, you know, it's like 50-50.
Okay, so the takeaway is not everybody is able to do decisions under uncertainty, and it's a difficult and challenging task, right? And economics actually has been dealing with that for quite a while, right? Like we,
and I would say that's the core. Mm-hmm. That's like that when I think at least about the added value, the true added value of what it's providing to businesses or institutions, it's this, it's these moments.
And so can you say what the challenge is? Because to me, you know, economics is about decision-making under uncertainty and working with the data, right?
Yep.
Using as much data as possible to come up with an outcome that we can base the decision on. So what is the challenge then?
The challenge is convincing people that it's not just about the model. It's about the analyst. It's about the person thinking through the whatever environment you are, especially when, for instance, during the pandemic, when econometric models are likely to fail, and you then need to rely on a person at the end of the day who's just thinking through the issues of the day for guidance. And usually that is at the end of the day what we do. And I mean, I think like I have this quote from Stanley Fisher, who kind of summarized the challenge, I would say, as well. So he came to a similar realization when he was a young lad, but he was talking about it when he was vice chairman at the Fed. Mm-hmm. And he summarized it like this, that he's describing the world and how it's incredibly complex, and we can't really model it all that well. And if push came to shove and he had a choice between whether he wants to choose some econometric model or a really great analyst like Bob Solow, mm-hmm. that he would choose Bob Solow in particular. And I tend to agree. And that's what we need to convince people, that there's the value in just the critical analysis of the person, not necessarily generated from a model, even though we use that to frame the analysis, of course. But
so you'd say that the pandemic has highlighted the importance of people in this, that it's impossible to just rely on the technicalities and run some regressions and call it something else,
yeah.
But you really need people who understand what the models are doing and where they have problems and how does it link to the challenges of the world.
So I wish that's what the pandemic did.
Okay.
But the pandemic did not do that, unfortunately, as far as I can tell. Mm-hmm. That actually the industry has continued to go down the data science route. And so when we think about where the industry is headed, that is where it's headed. I thought in, you know, February of 2020, when China originally went down and really nobody had any idea what was going on. And Space Snow was incredibly popular commodity at the time. We were getting embedded with, you know, what is going on? Can you see anything? Please help us. And I really thought at that moment it was going to be a watershed moment for what we're talking about. But quickly people forgot, and we're back in this mold where if there's a preference. So if I pose the same question to the industry as Fisher posed it to himself, it would be the opposite. It would be, if I had a choice between a great analyst or an econometric model, I would rather have an econometric model. And so this is, again, the challenge to try to convince the industry to adopt the Fisher way of thinking about the world and the usefulness of what we do as a field of economics.
You mentioned data science, which is again another maybe buzzword that is appearing in the industry. So how do you perceive this trend?
I'm really concerned, actually. I'm concerned in the sense that I think we are accommodating the data science, not just the terms, but also everything that goes along with it, technically speaking. And I'm a little concerned that it is really down this path where you really lose the analyst in it. When you start going down this machine learning AI path. And if we're not too careful and we adopt this way, this mindset, if we are teaching the next generation that where we incorporate the data science-y way of looking at the world too much, then we could very easily just lose, you know, kind of the soul of what it means to be an economist. Or to think analytically within the context of macroeconomics. And so I don't, it's a little bit half-baked idea that I've been thinking about, but I'm just a little bit worried. That's it at the moment. It's just concern.
Don't you think this is a question of a huge demand that has appeared here in the recent years for data-driven decision-making, right? Everybody is asking for data-driven decision-making, which requires some analysis of data. And we know that it can be at very different levels.
So I don't know if there's a demand for data-driven analysis, or if we've always been generating data-driven analysis for decades now, and we're just calling it something else. It used to be just cold hard econometrics. That would be your data-driven your data-driven output, and now we're kind of just changing. I feel like we're just changing the names and not really addressing the.
But don't you think that it's becoming much more widespread, that before, the data-driven decision-making and the econometrics were available only to some, you know, high-level decision-makers, big organizations and things like that. But now everybody wants to do it because it's available.
Yeah, yeah. And it's easy. Been you democratized Excel, almost, right? With anybody with a Python library can now call themselves a data scientist almost. Just running some data through some algorithms, and it precisely, it's like you need kind of training. That's the key part. I feel like there's a good analogy in there somewhere where you just give somebody some tool but don't teach them how to use it, that they're just gonna produce crap.
Yes. And so how do you see this as an opportunity or is it a challenge or...
It's my life's mission.
Okay, so that's an opportunity for you. And how do you proceed to address it?
Absolutely.
If you can share with us.
Sure. So, yeah, I think the opportunity is in education and training, getting to the, essentially, the next generation and trying to teach them as much as you can in the mold that you think is correct. Yeah, how likely or how easy or how possible that really is. I mean, everything I'm talking about has really taken off in certain institutions. So for instance, central banks, wonderful institutions that know exactly what I'm talking about right now. And it's more about taking that model, not the economic model, the framework, the idea of how to do analysis and try to apply it to private sector.
Do you think we have the resources that the central banks do?
Exactly.
It's a huge infrastructure that it takes, right?
Yeah, and it's there's scalability issues, and I don't have the answer necessarily to this. The only answer I can say is, at least if you attempt to do it this way, you're at least approaching something that I consider, that I would be have pride in, and that I would consider you're touching the surface of what it takes to provide real value. If you're in the private sector and you're doing something for some client. Otherwise, at least personally, I just don't see the value added. But also, I'm like maybe not the best person to ask because I have very specific background.
And don't you think that it's in a way similar to the other technical fields, for example, IT or engineering, where you need an expert to actually do the model, but then you need someone who translates it to the managers who then make it work, business.
Right, exactly. I think a lot of people who, for instance, will graduate from Surge, they'll go into these business analyst roles when we talk about like corporate roles. And precisely, if you're doing your analytics, where you have like the technical person, non-economist, who's producing some, let's say, data-driven output, and then he sends it to somebody else, okay, please make sense of this. That's one way of doing it. And that's how I see the private sector doing it. However, like in the central bank, for instance, this process is much more interconnected. It's like, yeah, I like to think of it, it's kind of like a double helix almost, where the storytelling, the modeling, the analytics, it's all together at the same time simultaneously. And the making sense of it just happens naturally in the process. As opposed to, the alternative where it's much more disjointed. And yeah, that is precisely how I felt a lot of the time when dealing with the type of output, econometric type output, where I'm just being fed some output and I have to like make sense of it, and it feels like a puzzle almost. And it's not fun.
And there was no one who you could discuss this with, the someone who generated the model, and so that you can talk together and make sense of it.
You can, but like, it's also the type of models that you are using. So there are certain models within the industry that are prone to be used within storytelling, within, you know, the models themselves are helpful to tell the story. And then there's certain modeling tools that
are not,
especially ones that you find in a Python library, for instance, where it's really you're feeding something, some data, and you're hoping that the algorithm will give you something. And so it's really this notion of black boxes when it comes to models, which I abhor.
One of the topics we were hoping we can discuss with you were startups. So do you see a role of startups that they could actually help to generate some, you know, to use the opportunities that you see in the market?
So, of course, there's going to be opportunity whenever you can convince somebody that what you're doing is valuable. But it's really that moment of trying to convince something, which can be is a huge uphill battle. So I'm not sure if a startup in this sense, as we're talking about it, is going to be the change maker. I kind of feel like it's going to have to be a institution that is already well established.
Okay.
But they've decided to maybe change how they're doing things. And then that would lead to some watershed for the industry.
I would say Space No had an interesting idea, right, about finding its niche. Can you tell us maybe more about this company or your projects there?
Sure.
How you dealt with the China and the pandemic, maybe?
Exactly. I started at Space No in late 2019, and so COVID was right around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to Space No, I was again studying at Surge, so I was kind of out of the whole thinking about the world.
Okay.
So I and usually like that's a you really have to be embedded in that stuff to get a good intuition about how things are going on, or how you expect things to evolve, and just getting thrown in, it can be very difficult to find your bearings and realize where you are in terms of trying to analyze, you know, what the hell is going on. Quite quickly thrusted in with COVID, and I would say without any kind of like fundamental understanding about anything prior to what was happening in the world economy before that point, mm-hmm. only using data that I was looking at on my screen at Space No.
Okay.
I was able to provide some insight about what was going on before anyone else had any idea about what exactly this impact of locking down was going to be. So I think we have evidence on maybe in some emails or some posts on LinkedIn where we were sharing some of our insights that I was generating in the midst of that, without any real product, just some looking at locations in China on my laptop and on our front end application.
So it's really more about the access to the right data at the right time than any specific analytics.
Like the, yeah. So I think the there are going to be these times where people understand the value of data like SpaceNow, that SpaceNow can provide, or anyone for that matter, that is alternative. But sometimes it's those times are a little bit seldom. COVID is
hopefully it was a rare event.
Hopefully COVID settles in some steady state soon enough.
Do we have a new rare UN event, right? And the Russian-Ukrainian front. So there are rare events occurring
all the time.
All the time.
So exactly. There's always going to be interest because when rare events happen, usually our models fail by definition because they're rare and truly unpredictable.
And now you're going for a new venture, right? You're starting this new venture with your dad, which is focused on bringing useful economic modeling and analysis practices to anyone willing to listen. So can you maybe say a few words about this?
We're just starting out. I would say everything I've said thus far is essentially the vision. I've been talking pretty on point about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about creating this watershed moment for the industry, to try to think differently than they have been. That's all we're trying to, we are trying to, we are trying to create more Bob Solos, for instance,
mm-hmm.
in institutions that we will have connection to. And essentially, the idea is you get enough Bob Solos within an institution, they're going to change it.
Mm.
People will recognize the value of these types of people in your organization, and then it will just become a matter of time.
So what would you say are the skills a Bob Solo needs to have?
I don't think you need to be... So, for instance, I would say, I've got moderate intelligence, okay? Nothing terribly special. So I wouldn't say that it takes any type of special intelligence. You just need a framework for thinking about things. That framework needs to allow you to... Because the world is very complex. And if you just start from first principles and try to explain everything in the world, you're just going to get lost. Nobody is smart enough for that, to decipher everything. Break the puzzle into little pieces, analyze them individually, try to make sense of the world in that way. And there, I think you will start producing interesting things, insights. How do I want to say it? Like, when I started to more focus on being like a analyst first, as opposed to some modeler or thinking about just the output of what some model will give me, and I more focused on being an analyst and trying to tell a story, then I realized the people I'm talking to, their eyes light up. When I'm doing my work, my eyes are lighting up, and I realized that I started, even though I'm probably, again, not the smartest person in the world, but I'm at least producing something of interest to people. And I think that's kind of the goal. And it makes sense, So
it's a mixture of having the ability to analyze things, but at the same time, making sure that you can explain yourself.
Exactly.
And people can hear you and understand.
Yeah, exactly. So actually, I would say 90% of the problem is presentation. If you can't present your ideas in a clear and intelligible way, it doesn't matter how complicated your model is or how smart you think you are. If you can't explain it to somebody else in plain English, in simple terms that make sense to everybody, intuitionally, then you've lost.
Yes, but it's a huge challenge, right? Because as you said, the world is complex and many issues are complex, so they take a longer time and maybe, you know, some sort of deeper understanding. But hopefully your audience is at the level that you are not talking to general public. I'm now thinking about politics, you know, how the politicians need to go to simple terms because they need to be understood. And then we end up with the populist. But hopefully when you are an analyst, you are talking to a relatively educated audience, so you don't need to... there is a higher level that you can talk at.
Sure, and then, but also at the same time, for instance, this is the issue, central issue, I'd say, with central banks, is that they're doing everything we're talking about, and they have to talk to everybody and try to communicate in a way that is on a very level that everyone can have access to that information. That they're providing.
Well, Jared, I think we posed a lot of challenges. Thank you for your insights. I think it was really interesting. Is there anything else you'd like to say at the end?
No, I'm just happy to be back in search, to be honest. It's been quite a long time now.
I think we're happy that the doors are slowly opening up, so...
Good.
It will be.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.